When a town, city, or county has a new project on the table, say a housing development or a new road system, there will probably be public meetings to give people a chance to weigh in. But do those meetings give officials an accurate picture of what their community wants and needs? Our next guest says that feedback on the local level is sometimes, often maybe, dominated by naysayers. Sometimes too much engagement can actually get in the way of forward-thinking policies. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you go to public hearings or meetings in your community? Do you think the voices there are representative of your community? Have you ever gone to a meeting to support an idea as opposed to opposing it? Do you work on the other side of things? In city or county or local government of some sort, what do you see when you have public meetings? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Alan Ehrenhalt is a senior editor at Governing Magazine. His recent piece on this is called When Citizen Engagement Becomes Too Much. Alan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Well, you write that there's just generally kind of an assumption that, yeah, if a local government's going to do something, you should, ought to, in some cases legally have public hearings, public meetings, right?
That's the universal assumption. Nobody wants to be seen as anti-public engagement, and I'm not actually, but I do make the point that calling a public meeting and watching who comes into the room and listening to them is not necessarily going to get you the balance of public opinion on a question. Public meetings tend to be, as this has been known since the 1950s, public meetings, if you don't work hard to affect the way they operate, They draw in people who are against things over and over again. And people who are for things or neutral, they're just not as likely to go to those public events. And that's a problem. I wrote about Austin, Texas, where they have spent 5 years on a new zoning code, and they have had dozens, if not hundreds, of public meetings. And they eventually had to just stop say that we're not getting anywhere, and despite all this public engagement, we're back where we started from. And I think there's a lesson in that.
Yeah, let's dig into some of the issues you point out. One is who shows up, not just necessarily people who are against things, but also it might overrepresent people with time or resources. How can public meetings, I guess, misrepresent the demographics of a community?
I think in a fairly simple way. You call a public meeting, and you're going to get people, as you say, who have the time to go. Probably going to get a slightly more affluent group of people. That's just the way it turns out. And you get people who are angry about things. Not many people show up at a public meeting on any project just to say, I'm really feeling great about everything, and I want to say how what a wonderful job you're all doing. I mean, there may be people like that. You don't run across many of them.
And you also, in that Austin example you gave a case of there were kind of two separate conflicting interests. In this case, we don't have to dig into the details, but people advocating for larger scale public housing and people like homeowners who didn't want larger buildings in their neighborhoods. And what started off as, you know, maybe just some advocates on each side, because it was a us versus them situation, in these public hearings, lines got drawn firmer and thicker than they had been when they started.
Yes, and after 5 years, people were angrier at each other than they had been in the beginning. And, you know, my research suggested in Austin, by 2017, there had been 4,000 public comments and 60 position papers submitted to the city council. So it became not only a chore to get through it, but an impossibility, and they eventually had to pull the plug.
Now, you also write that you don't want to go back to a situation where maybe one group of vested interests, whether that's developers or whoever's in a smoke-filled room, makes non-transparent public decisions. Right? Is there some kind of middle ground?
Well, public engagement doesn't have to simply be large-scale public meetings. You can take polls. Polls are sometimes helpful. Members of a city council can go knocking on doors and asking people what they think. That's not foolproof, but those two things suggest that there are other ways you can solicit public opinion other than calling meetings. And one thing I can tell you with a pretty good certainty is that no matter how many public meetings you hold on any issue, the people who end up on the losing side will say there wasn't enough and they weren't consulted, and the whole thing was railroaded. It turns out not to be true most of the time, but people who lose are going to blame it on what they see as lack of access, even if that's not the fact.
Talking to Alan Ehrenhalt, senior editor at Governing Magazine, about public input, public hearings in local decision-making, and how maybe sometimes too much public input can make it hard to actually get things done in the first place. We'll bring on a caller now. We have Charlie on the line in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question for your guest today is concern regarding the education or the actual knowledge of the people who are getting involved in voting. There are people who are now socialists and they have no idea what socialism is or the actual cost. Or another example is that they think they get free health care when in fact it's not free, or free college education.
Let's put that, thanks, Charlie, in the context of a local government decision, Alan, where, you've got the elected city council maybe, and experts, consultants from without or people within the government system who know more about, say, traffic management than the public. So how do you, is that part of the problem, a non-experts weighing in on things like this?
I think that's sometimes a problem. My experience is that people who show up at these meetings do tend to have a reasonable level of knowledge about what's being planned, but they also often have an ideological axe to grind. I think that's a bigger, that's a bigger problem than ignorance, frankly, is the rigidity of people who like to spend their time going to public meetings.
Is there a different way to convene things and, I guess, start things earlier in the process with setting agendas, bringing together disparate groups to start hammering things out before a pro or con proposal comes to a public hearing?
I think that's right. When these things go wrong, often what you find is that the local government knew what it wanted to do, and then it started having meetings. And that's really not the right way to do it. You need to start at the beginning and using several techniques. Focus groups can be helpful. As I said a little earlier, public polls are useful, and old-fashioned door knocking. There are other ways to find out what the public wants, but to assume that if you just hire a hall and bring in 200 people in an evening meeting that you're going to get a fair sampling of public opinion, I think that's where these things tend to go wrong.
In your experience covering these issues, do you see communities doing it right, that where they have a level of transparency, they have a genuine interest in input from the community, and structured in a way that there isn't the naysayer's veto that just shoots everything down?
I think there are places that have done it right. I'm not sure which ones to single out, but I think Portland and Seattle have done a pretty good job of monitoring public opinion, although certainly not foolproof, and have done some pretty creative things in development in those cities in the last 10 or 20 years. But you're looking the other way, you think of something like the Big Dig in Boston, which everybody's heard of, which ended up costing, I don't know how many, $25 billion or something, and was supposed to take a few years, and it took a few decades, and at the end, they ended up with a pretty good project, actually, but people felt, who were on the losing side, felt that nobody was asking their opinion, and their opinion was sought time after time. It's just a common syndrome.
Bring on another caller now. Bill is with us in Osseo. Bill, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My question is, can we use social media or more of a online forum to get people's opinion without having them show up in person?
Bill, thanks. Alan, is there a way to use technology as you see it to garner, solicit these kind of opinions?
Yeah, I think social media is valuable here. It's not foolproof either, But it is a way of informing people so that when they do go to a meeting, they will know what the parameters are of what's being discussed. I think that's, you know, as much time as people spend on social media, it's probably an underused way of providing basic facts about something that a local government wants to do. I should ask your caller if the Norske Nook is still open in Osseo.
The Norske Nook is still open and delivering great desserts.
Fantastic, Bill, and I'll put it.
Well, I don't mean to do a commercial, but I was there many, many years ago, and I really liked it.
I'll put in a plug. We'll be talking about pies on the morning show tomorrow at 6:30. Speaking of the Norske Nook, thanks for calling in, Bill. This is facetious a little bit, but can an amenity, when you convene a group, whether it's a focus group, whether it's a pie or, I know, childcare or something to make it more fun and festive, is there a way to set up engaging, fun public meetings that really bring people on board and maybe lowers the tension if there's an issue of conflict?
Well, a pie from the Norske Nook probably wouldn't be a bad idea, but not every local government is going to be able to do that. I think that they ought to pay some attention to the timing of these meetings. If they're all at the same time, if they're all at 8 o'clock at night, which is tends to be when they are. You're going to get people who can come at that hour. I mean, I think you need to spread that around, maybe have some during the day, some on weekends, so that you get a different cohort of people who are available at different times during the week. If it's sort of like when you start all the World Series games at 8:20 Eastern time, you're going to get people who are available to watch at that time. But you miss a lot of people, so obviously not a direct parallel, but I think that's one thing that can be done.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Alan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
Alan Ehrenhalt is a senior editor at Governing Magazine. He was with us to talk about public feedback in local government and how sometimes it can hold communities back from making new ideas a reality. You can still share your thoughts. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR. If you've experienced this as a engaged citizen yourself or as somebody who works as a local elected official or a local staff.